Chapter 32. Depart, depart. Nevertheless, I tell you the truth. It is expedient for you that I go away. Jesus, 1881. Mrs. Eddy went personally, almost as a penitent, to the 8 defectors, but not one of them would so much as open the door. She wrote to her young friend, Alice Sibley, who had recently turned 17. My little friend is never forgotten by me. However many friends or enemies come between us, never forget me, will you? I am hanging yet, even as a monkey hangs from a branch, in all respects except the hinder appendage. Take care of the company you keep. Be not deceived in anyone. Attempt no more than is thy duty. Teach people to be unselfish and bear their own burdens, at least while you are willing to do more than they. Do not make my mistake to take upon yourself all the baggage of this journey onward. But correct people's taste, if not their conscience, in that they think to make others their handy slaves. All this is a new tongue, is it not, dear little one? But I mean it, and you need it. None of the 8 dissenters appeared at the church meeting of October 31st. For Dorcas Rawson and Miranda Rice, Mrs. Eddy had long borne the baggage and the burdens of the journey onward. And to James Howard, she had given much aid, economic as well as spiritual. By the end of October, she had had 3 visions involving James Howard and Richard Kennedy. Number 1. I saw a great huge elephant, a watchdog, and Kay. The elephant followed me into a house and pursued me from room to room until I got into my last room and the dog was watching outside for me. Then the vision disappeared. Number 2. I saw Kay and H. And Kay looked to me, shaking his finger, and said, pointing to H, quote, "This is the elephant that shall crush you into fragments, beginning on your limbs." End quote. Then I looked at H, and over his head was written Absalom, in blue luminous letters, and at his left side were dark clouds rolling up over their heads, passing toward K. Number 3. Saw H, sitting, bowing his head with his hands to his face, holding his head, and I knew what he was saying, and it was telling the students who had signed that letter. Quote, "Don't give Mrs. Eddy a chance to talk to you. Turn away from her, and I will lead you." End quote. And by his side stood Kay, governing his thoughts. After the visions, she heard a voice crying, "Save my people," repeated 3 times. Later, the voice said 3 times, "Mine hour hath come." The hour had come, and it was marked by more desertions from the ranks. But the loyal followers were more certain than ever of Mrs. Eddy's spirituality and leadership. The next week, on the 9th of November, they ordained their leader pastor of the Church of Christ Scientist. It was a simple ceremony, with Mrs. Whiting officiating. A week later, on November 16th, The Christian Scientist Association met at the Choate's home in Boston. Mrs. Choate, Abby Whiting, and Samuel P. Bancroft had drawn up the following resolutions, which were adopted. Resolved, that we, the members of the Christian Scientist Association, do herein express to our beloved teacher and acknowledged leader, Mary B. Glover Eddy, our sincere and heartfelt thanks and gratitude for her earnest labors in behalf of this association by her watchfulness of its interest and persistent efforts to maintain the highest rule of Christian love among its members. Resolved, that while she has had little or no help, except from God, in the introduction to this age of materiality of her book, Science and Health, and the carrying forward of the Christian principles it teaches and explains, she has been unremitting in her faithfulness to her God-appointed work, and we do understand her to be the chosen messenger of God, to bear his truth to the nations. And unless we hear her voice, we do not hear his voice. Resolved, that the charges made to her in a letter signed by J.C. Howard, M.R. Rice, D.B. Rawson, and five others of hypocrisy, ebullitions of temper, and love of money are utterly false, and the cowardice of the signers in refusing to meet her and sustain or explain said charges be treated with the righteous indignation it justly deserves. That while we deplore such wickedness and abuse of her, who has befriended them in their need, and when wrong, met them with honest, open rebuke, we look with admiration and reverence upon her Christ-like example of meekness and charity, and will, in future, more faithfully follow and obey her divine instructions, knowing that in so doing, we offer the highest testimonial of our appreciation of her Christian leadership. Resolved, that a copy of these resolutions be presented to our teacher and leader, Mary B. Glover Eddy, and a copy be placed on the records of this Christian Scientist Association. There were other protestations of loyalty. Arthur Buswell wrote her on the 22nd of December that he had, quote, explicit faith in our leader and consider her love and labor as divine, end quote. But her leadership now was to leave them. She had had instructions from on high, quote, get thee up, depart, depart, end quote. And she set about working to that end. A special church meeting was called for the 25th of December, at which time two new members, one of whom was Julia Bartlett, were admitted to the purged ranks of her infant church. One of Mrs. Eddy's remarkable healings should be mentioned here. Although it probably occurred a little earlier, it took place at number 8 Broad Street, which she was soon to leave for the last time. At Lynn, when Mrs. Eddy lived there, a teamster passing her house was thrown to the ground so that a heavily loaded wagon ran over him. One wheel crossed his body, crushing it. Men who carried him into her house regarded him as dead. The commotion caused by the accident attracted Mrs. Eddy's attention, and she went downstairs to where the body was and treated silently. In a short time, the injured man became conscious, sat up, stood up, declared he was not hurt, and walked back to his team. Another occurrence of interest should be mentioned before the final departure from Lynn. That is the Eddy's visit to Ralph Waldo Emerson. We have this record that our leader wrote at a later date to Miss Lane, one of her students. Now beware of what our master warned his students against. In other words, the doctrines of men. Waldo Emerson was a man fitting a niche in history well, and we all in Massachusetts love him. But he was as far from accepting Christian Science as a man can be, who was a strict moralist. Bronson Alcott is far in advance of him. I saw Emerson some months before his demise, went for the purpose of healing him. Let no one but my husband, Dr. Eddy, who went with me, know it. As soon as I got into the deep recesses of his thoughts, I saw his case was hopeless. I can work only by God's graces and by his rules. So when I said in reply to his remark, quote, "I am old and my brains are wearing out from hard labor," end quote, and then chattered like a babe, quote, "But you believe in the powers of God above all causation, do you not?" end quote. He answered, "Yes." And this followed in substance. "But it would be profane for me to believe a man does not wear out. I don't believe God can or wants to prevent this result of old age. Now, Miss L., what would this be for an item of history that normal class students from the only college or school in our land teaching the supremacy of mind over all error should relapse into studying the ethics of one who died in that belief? Can you find in any work higher ethics than in science and health?" It was mid-January before the Eddies finally left their home in Lynn, but the farewell meeting with her few faithful followers was on Christmas night in 1881. The students were deeply moved by her parting words and her reading of John 17. "I have manifested thy name unto the men which thou gavest me out of the world. Thine they were, and thou gavest them me, and they have kept thy word. For I have given unto them the words which thou gavest me, and they have received them, and have known surely that I came out from thee, and they have believed that thou didst send me. I pray not that thou shouldest take them out of the world, but that thou shouldest keep them from the evil. As thou hast sent me into the world, even so have I also sent them into the world. O righteous Father, the world hath not known thee, but I have known thee, and these have known that thou hast sent me." The men which Infinite Mind had given to the leader had failed her one after another. The womanhood of God was beyond their comprehension, and the demands of this higher understanding were left unfulfilled. Following James Howard's leadership to apostasy, the men in the ranks were mostly women. But woman's day was dawning. In the Key to the Scriptures, which Mrs. Eddy had been working on for several years, she had identified the second river of Eden as, quote, the rights of woman, acknowledged morally, civilly, and socially, end quote. This channel of thought met with much resistance from the Adam, but the Eve was more receptive to the advancing idea. Upon four of the women in the church, Mrs. Eddy placed the responsibility for leading her flock in the mother's absence. To one of the four, Miss Julia Bartlett, she mailed a poem which she had written on the eve of her departure, with the request that it be read to the church. To the Church of Christ Scientist. With love's battle flags unfurled, with hope's cause before the world, we are going on. Though the storm clouds thunder o'er us, though the path seems dark before us, though the foemen strive to kill us, we are going on. For our Master led the way, fought the fight, and won the day. Follow, follow all who may, going on, going on. Stand ye only back, who dare not the cross of Christ to bear. We are going on. Triumph's star above us gleaming, victory on our foreheads beaming, for fresh duties hourly reaching, we are going on. To fulfill each hope and aim, conquer sickness, sin, and blame, and each erring heart reclaim, going on, going on. From the darkness of the night, into morning's golden light, sisters, labor on. With the aid of God's own science, with no heed of hate's defiance, truth and right my sole reliance, I shall labor on. Your loving teacher, Mary Baker Glover Eddy.